So that brings an end to Mike Wagner and the Bops.
Yep.
And you pursue a career in broadcasting.
That's correct.
Let's just go through your radio stations you worked for after you graduated from Brown.
Okay. I really didn't want to go to, you know, Tire Track, Nebraska, or, you know, Moosehorn in Alaska. I wanted to stay close with my family, and that's just how I am. So I was very fortunate, very, very fortunate. The placement director at Brown Institute landed a good position for me at a very reputable radio station in Eau Claire, WEAQ Radio, and the ownership there was delightful. It was on-site ownership, and aided me and assisted me in getting a house and finding a place to live over there, and just a delightful family. And I went to work for it at EAQ. At that point in time, you're starting to really get excited about the business, just like I was passionate and excited about the music business. I poured everything I had into bettering my position and exploring to find out where my limits were with various things. And there was a guy that was very well known in the Twin Cities. His name was DJ Leary. And DJ Leary had become the general manager of a radio station in Duluth, WEBC Radio. I ran into him at some point in time, or somebody found out where he was and where I was. Anyhow, we got together. EBC Radio at the time was a sister station with KRSI in Minneapolis and WNAX in Yankton, South Dakota. And those were all owned by Red Owl Grocery Store and Snyder's. EBC in Duluth was a monster station, big signal. I mean, it's like, whoa. And I had an opportunity to go to work for DJ, and I did. Went up there and did mornings, and it was just wonderful. Enjoyed it. My family grew. I grew as a person in that business. And then one day I was contacted by Scott Burton, WDGY Radio, and of course I couldn't believe that phone call, because I grew up under the shadows of the Nine Towers of Power. I mean, like, you know, had to pinch me that why would anybody be talking to me after so few number of years in the harness. But anyhow, went to work for WDGY Radio, and was there for about 7 years. It was, you know, going full circle, and it was so fun and so delightful, and I met so many wonderful people, Johnny Canton and Scott Burton, and, you know, our dear friend Don K. Martin, who recently passed away, Perry St. John, just a dream come true for me.
And at some point, you apparently had the itch to form a band.
Yes.
And start playing again.
Yep.
And that was what, called what?
A Music Machine.
And what year roughly was that?
Let's see. I think that would have been in the middle 70s,
okay.
Probably.
All right. So you missed playing?
Oh, of course. Of course.
And how long did the Music Machine last?
You know, we bounced around for 3, 4, 5 years playing cover tunes and working in places like the Surfside and Lake Minnetonka and places like that. It was so fun, and it wasn't nearly as intense as working back in the Bops days, and we didn't have the travel and all. We just went out and had fun.
And then at some point you made the switch from radio to TV, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And what TV stations did you work for?
My first television job, there's one little back step here, that when I left WDGY, I had all those years prior to that been on the air and did, you know, worked with the music director and program director and things of that nature. It always was of interest to me that the salespeople drove the nice cars and talent folks didn't have the nice cars, and I decided, you know, I'm going to see what that's all about. And I talked to Dale Weber, who was the general manager of WDGY at the time, about becoming a salesperson. And he wasn't very encouraging, and I understand why, because he needed experienced people to go out and sell a dominant radio station like WDGY was. But I had a friend who was a sales manager at WLTE, which back in that day was WCCO-FM, and his name was John Fenari, and I owe a lot to him right now today. He'd been a groupie of the band. He'd followed the Bops around for years. And they were going to expand the sales staff, and we kept in contact over the years. He said, you know, Mike, didn't you used to book your own band and do this and that and the other thing? I said, oh, of course I did. Well, do you think you could sell radio? And I said, I don't see why I couldn't. He said, why don't you come down, talk to us, and we'll see what happens. Well, anyhow, I did get my first sales job in media at WCCO-FM. And it was absolutely the start of a wonderful new chapter for me.
Okay, and then after that job, you moved to a different station?
I went to Channel 9 Television.
That's KMSP?
Yeah, KMSP. Yep.
Okay. And at some point, you put together another band, and is that the Roadhouse Band?
Well, there's quite a bit of elapsed time here. My television career took me over a period of, you know, into the teens of years, working nearly 20 years on the television sales side, ending up at many years at KSDP Television, Channel 5, as a sales manager. Since that, which was, you know, a few years ago, I formed a band called Memphis Tracks, and also recently, in the last year and a half or so, put together a band that's become very, very busy and a whole lot of fun called Roadhouse. And we're just out playing boogie.
What's the difference between the two bands?
Memphis Tracks is concentrated mostly on the early years of rockabilly and the early years of roots blues. The Roadhouse Band is just playing a bar band and boogie, 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 and dance your socks off, and a little bit of this, a little bit of that. We play everything from Carl Perkins to Tommy Castro. So,
do you ever run into people at your shows who saw Mike Wagner and the Bops?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did this past weekend. A gentleman come up and he said, are you the same Mike Wagner that had this band out in Richfield? And I said, yeah. Well, I said, I think I am. Tell me more. And he recited a little chapter and verse, and I said, yep, that's me. And also ran into some radio folks in the last months that remember the band from the old days and my years on the air and so forth. So hard to live down the reputation.
From what I understand, your records have become bootlegged across Europe, and I believe you got a phone call one day from Tony Andreessen in Paris, France.
I did indeed. My dear friend Tony called me up and reminded me that this wasn't just a crank call, and I said, I will capture as best I can because I cherish this this little episode of my life. Tony called, and he and the Trashmen have been extremely successful and well received in Europe for many, many years, and Tony continues to go over there and do a wonderful job. But this little event, he and some associates were sitting outside, is my understanding, of a little French cafe, and on the sound system of this restaurant, or the area at least, comes our record Baby Baby. And he's talking to some musical friends who are aware of what's going on. They talked about that record. And he said, well, I know that guy. He said, you do? And he said, yeah. And we talked about it. He said, I had to call and tell you this. He says, it's just remarkable what's going on here. So,
does it bother you that your records are bootlegged?
You know, it doesn't bother me at all. I consider it a blessing because We had so much fun doing this. We earned our keep. We earned our stripes. And if other people find this valuable enough and important enough to include in their work, I'm flattered.
So if I do my math correctly, and it's 2013, and you started in 1950 playing with your dad, that would mean you've been performing for 63 years.
That's about it. You sound like a tax accountant. I see here that you had coffee. I got to give you some of that.
After 63 years, you're not tired of it?
Of course not. I don't want to get sappy here, boys, but it's a wonderful, wonderful element of my life that I've enjoyed immensely. I continue to enjoy it. It's my fresh air. It's just delightful, and to have the opportunity to come here and talk to you fellows and put this on tape, and hopefully someday somebody will have an interest in listening to it. It doesn't get any better.
So if somebody came up to you and said, yeah, Mike, it's time for you to move for that cabin up north and retire and go fish, you would say what?
Well, here's how I'm going to structure my answer as follows, and this is nothing but as honest as I can be. We go out and play. We played Friday night. Place is packed. It's 41 degrees outside. We played last night, same place. It was packed, and it was zero.
0 degrees.
It's 0 degrees. And whether it's one person or two persons or however many people, when they're still shouting and hollering at the end of the night to play more and the dance floor is still full, that's all you need.
What kind of demographics do you draw now?
We had them from drinking age to walkers last night. Honest to goodness.
So you still like to see people out there dancing and enjoying your music?
Absolutely. And what I'm hearing from a lot of venue operators and owners, let's call them, and people who are making a living off selling entertainment, they wish there were more good dance bands available, because dancing is very popular regardless of, you know, how you dance or to what level. It doesn't matter. It's just people out expressing themselves and having a good time. Example, last Sunday, we played for a big benefit out at the Minnesota Arboretum, and a cancer benefit for a couple of people who have the horrible misfortune of having cancer. I talked to the person who was one of the organizers. That's 700 people through there last Sunday. They raised $35,000 for these people. And our band, our little band, was complimented up and down and sideways. Channel 11 showed up, shot footage of the thing. When you feel like you've contributed something of that nature for that kind of an opportunity for other people to enjoy themselves, it's like, okay, this is what we're supposed to do. That's absolutely what happened. It was marvelous, just marvelous. I got another benefit. We're going to do it for free coming up in March over back in my hometown of Richfield for a gentleman who's coming back from the service and not doing well. We're going to go in there and bust our hinders for him, too.
When you look back at the time period from roughly 1955 to 1965, what musicians here in town impressed you?
Well, let me see. How do I go about this? I'm being totally candid. Probably the musician that impressed me the most and had to do the most to do with my own excitement was my brother.
Collie
Wagoner, just an incredible player. If it had strings on it, he could play it. His life evolved. He was able to play five string. He was able to play a pedal steel. He played classical guitar. He played rock and roll guitar. Sat in on a number of sessions, and you know, on and on. So I miss him terribly, but he left. He left a wonderful gift for a lot of us. I'm impressed with my cousin Dave Wagoner with Crow. This guy just absolutely knocks him dead every time he goes out, and still does. He's a great vocalist. He's got guts. He's got a timbre to his voice and a presentation that makes you want to dance and makes you want to smile. Hmm. He does it. Tony Andreessen, incredible guitar player. Love the guy, and as a person, he's just an A+. Jimmy Johnson, Calvin James, call him whatever you want, but don't call him a bad guitar player, because he's fabulous. He's been fabulous since day one. Tommy Nystrom, who has departed us at some point in the years ago, but he hasn't departed most of our memories. Just to have the touch, just the feel. If he was playing a cowboy song, or he was playing a blues tune, or playing Wherever There's a Will, There's a Way, it doesn't matter. He was great. And on and on and on it goes. You know, I'm going to leave hundreds of people out here, but you ask me the question, and these names just roll right in.
With the popularity of Minnesota music and your music over in Europe, have you ever thought about making a trip to Europe to play live?
Oh, of course. I think it would be a blast. I mean, old guys rock, you know? And I think if the opportunity, and it was, you know, a genuine opportunity, you don't want to necessarily go over there with change in your pocket, because you still got to get home. But, of course, wherever it goes, there's still an appeal, not only for the genre of music that's my very special favorite, which is rockabilly, but there is a wide appeal, and I'll give you an example. My son Sean, who's become an excellent drummer and worked with me in Memphis Trax, works with me in Memphis Trax, is kind of an aficionado and a collector, selector. He called, this has been a couple of years ago now, but he says, "Dad, you won't believe what's on eBay." And I said, "What's on eBay?" He says, "One of your records." So he says, "Guess how much it's sitting at right now?" And I says, "I have no idea." He says, "Like $648. He says, "Have you still got a box of those?" And so we laughed and had a big joke about it. But and the same is true with many, many other musicians and bands from the Twin Cities. Their records and their products that they created are sought after, and more power to them. It's a great thing.
Mike, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today about your history in the local music business.
Well, the thank yous go both ways, boys, because what you guys are doing, I believe in my heart of hearts, is really more important than the individual contributors, because peers of mine want to leave a legacy and leave some tracks in the sand here, and you fellas have picked up the baton and put this thing together, and you poured your heart and soul into it, and your time and your money. I'm just humbled to be a part of this. You've been a friend like no other. You guys just make it work, and thanks for keeping it alive. Like my dear departed father used to say, "You're not gone until no one remembers you." And you guys are doing a wonderful thing.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. The preceding interview was recorded on January 20th, 2013, at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota, and was produced by Denny Johnson and Tom Campbell. The copyright owner of this interview is MiniPaulMusic.com.